Thank you very much for inviting me along this evening to speak to you. My name is Mary-Anne McLeod. I'm a research officer at the Poverty Alliance and also a doctoral researcher at Glasgow University. The Poverty Alliance is Scotland's anti-poverty network, which works to tackle poverty and inequality through a range of campaigning, lobbying, community work and research activities. And in June 2014, the Scottish Government commissioned the Poverty Alliance to carry out a research report, on emergency food aid provision in Scotland. I was recruited to do this research, and I'm going to speak to you a bit about the research, which was published last month, and I brought a couple of hard copies along with me. So, I just want to give a brief overview of the aims and the methods used in the research and outline some of the key findings, paying particular attention to where I see some of the key successes and also some of the challenges involved in providing emergency food aid. And I'll also suggest some areas of good practice from community and voluntary groups which I identified through the research, and then highlight some of the report's key recommendations for policy and practice changes needed to address the root causes of poverty, which have given rise to the recent growth in charitable food aid in the UK. So the aims of the research, commissioned by the Scottish Government, was firstly to understand the roles which emergency food aid providers are playing and how they connect with each other and with other services. Secondly, to identify ways for emergency food aid providers to better link their clients to mainstream services. And thirdly, through the research and its outputs, to make a contribution to addressing the growth of food poverty in Scotland. In terms of methods, I initially spent a lot of time trying to pull together as comprehensive a list as possible of all providers in Scotland. So this included Trussell Trust food banks, soup kitchens, other independent food banks, and also community projects involved in some form of informal food aid. So I surveyed 167 providers and received 81 responses. I also had focus group sessions with 43 different individuals came along. This included food bank staff and volunteers, local authority staff and third sector organisations with an interest in addressing this issue of food poverty. I also spent time in a food bank, a community cafe project and a soup kitchen, where I had interviews with 14 individuals who were using these services. Overall, people were really keen to give their views and be involved and tell me about their experiences. So from my client interviews, the experience of accessing a food bank was just not described as a positive one, often evoking senses of stigma and shame. It was a last resort. They had no other choice. They were resigned to coming in order to get food. The first quote here is from a man I met at a food bank run by a social enterprise project in East Ayrshire. He'd been sent to the food bank by the job centre when his benefits were sanctioned. And the second is from an interview with a man who described having visited a food bank. It was really crowded and busy, and he didn't really have any interaction with the volunteers there at all. Longer case studies of both of these individuals are in the report. So I'm discussing the different roles which emergency food aid providers play, which was the focus of the questions about what else they're involved with. What many saw as their successes was the importance of providing emotional support, to offering a non-judgmental, non-threatening space where people felt safe. Several spoke about the impact on clients when they feel they're being listened to and treated with dignity and respect, which often was highlighted as something that people weren't getting from mainstream statutory services. A successful model in terms of being able to engage people with additional support services and other advice that they might need was through having specialist advisors such as citizens advice, welfare rights advice on site, so that people can be seen straight away without having to be signposted on elsewhere. A third role beyond the provision of food, which many spoke about, was that of advocacy. This was often provided in an informal basis by staff or volunteers phoning agencies with or on behalf of their clients. People spoke about the importance of having good relationships with named individuals within other services in order to be able to link people in to individuals they knew and could trust. So challenges then. The first key challenge related to providing these other sorts of support was that of capacity. Offering advocacy support, specialist advice, requires a lot of time, resources and expertise, which many informal, voluntary-run food banks do not have. Several participants also questioned how much they should be expected, how much should be expected of volunteers, and that many don't want to have that responsibility or that kind of engagement with people coming to their projects. The second challenge was that of lack of knowledge or access to up-to-date information about existing support services. While some groups might have drawn up their own lists of contacts, they were aware it was difficult to keep these up to date, and that many people didn't know where would necessarily be the most appropriate place to signpost someone to with a particular issue. And there was also a sense that many advice services themselves were struggling to meet the demands on them. And in addition, the challenges identified in operating referral systems from mainstream organisations to food banks and vice versa appears to be symptomatic of dilemmas which many agencies are facing in negotiating ongoing changes to the benefit system and the increased role being played by faith groups and informal voluntary groups in supporting the most vulnerable. The findings suggest there's a need to improve communications between emergency food aid providers and mainstream services, and that food bank volunteers may also require support and training in working with these agencies if we're to continue with this referral-based model. The third issue, which came through very strongly in my study and something I really want to emphasise, is the dilemma many face about providing emergency food aid in the first place. There's a clear tension between the desire to respond to the immediate needs of those in crisis and a recognition that the solutions to food poverty and responsibility for those solutions don't lie with volunteers at food banks. I got the sense from many when I was asking them about what else are you providing, how are you linking people into mainstream services, that we shouldn't be doing this in the first place. I'll read out this quote from one participant who said, "The food bank, in my opinion, is a sticking plaster. It's the underlying causes that need to be dealt with. We talk about what needs to be done. Well, we're giving people food. Why can't other people give them the means to feed themselves, i.e. don't cut their money or give them nothing to live on?" Sums up a lot of what's already been said. So from my fieldwork experience in this project, I've developed some areas of good practice. There are more detailed case studies and information about this on our website. But first is the point that food poverty is an issue of justice, not of charity, which has already been mentioned by Pete. And if we don't approach the issue as one of social justice and human rights, then food banks become part of the problem. And this anxiety of being part of the problem is something that was articulated by some people involved in the service themselves. We allow governments to take backseat and shift responsibility for feeding the most vulnerable onto communities and charities, well-intended yet ultimately unsustainable and, I would say, unjust approach. Secondly, community projects which are able to offer a welcoming environment and opportunities for reciprocity, so where projects where people could get involved in volunteering, essentially community development projects that have probably always been involved in their local communities and are trying to negotiate how they manage this food poverty issue, can often help reduce the stigma and shame that's associated with receiving charitable food handouts. And this first interviewee who spoke about volunteers' attitudes, and he made comparisons between a negative experience he'd had in a soup kitchen where he felt looked down upon and judged, to the community cafe context that I spoke to him in, where which was seen as more inclusive and non-judgmental. And he said we should treat people like $1 million, even if they've come for free food. Secondly, as I mentioned, a key factor in the success of many projects that I spoke to was where they were able to offer a more holistic package of support for people in crisis. Projects that can provide support to connect people to other services and work in partnership with other agencies, particularly advice agencies, so people are able to access that support to address the underlying issues which has taken them to emergency food aid services in the first place. And thirdly, the friendship and kindness which volunteers and staff at these community food projects can offer is important, as I say, often contrasted with the more impersonal interactions they might experience with mainstream services. However, I'd like to say I'm particularly interested in the importance of showing critical solidarity, so of recognising not just someone's hungry, but showing an interest in looking at the reasons why they're in that situation and support to try and address those problems. Right, so finally, I'll just highlight some of the key recommendations from the research report, which are made to principally Scottish national, local and organisational level. Firstly, as I've highlighted, it's crucial to consider the issue not as a matter of food, but of poverty and inequality. Food banks are seen as filling a gap in an eroded safety net. As this participant put it, charities and churches are doing the government's work and they're opting out. We're getting to the stage where people that's no got are being sent to a food bank rather than being given a proper income. So the report recommends that the Scottish Government take a strong policy position against the further institutionalisation of emergency food aid within mainstream welfare provision and send clear messages to the UK Government that revision of their current austerity and welfare reform agenda, in particular the punitive sanctions regime, is required in order to reverse this trend. Ultimately, we need a preventative approach to food poverty, which focuses on decent incomes and access to affordable, nutritious food. However, in the short term, it's important to focus on how emergency food aid can be best used to connect clients to more mainstream forms of support and also build resistance to the further entrenchment of such provision within the welfare state in Scotland. The report recommends further investment in the provision of specialist advice, such as citizens' advice services within emergency food aid services, as well as the need to improve the availability of up-to-date information on the range of both statutory and voluntary services. This would improve emergency food projects' knowledge of and ability to connect with other services at the local level. Finally, creating opportunities at both the national and local level for emergency food aid providers to network and share experience offers the potential for the development of collective advocacy and campaigning on food poverty, and continuing some of the critical conversations that came through very strongly from the focus group sessions that I ran. Following this research then, the Poverty Alliance has been funded to run a series of 4 regional short day sessions targeted at those providing emergency food aid. There was recognised the need to share experiences and challenges and good practice, and these sessions will provide the opportunity to learn about key issues such as in-work poverty and welfare reform, help build the evidence base of issues facing emergency food aid providers and the people they serve, and to develop a collective voice and to connect with wider anti-poverty campaigns and work. So,
thank you very much.
That's my presentation. The report, I brought a couple of copies. It's also available to download from this website, which was an output of the study, one of the Scottish Government's, one of the things that they wanted the research to come up with was some form of materials to help, because they recognised the issue that there were all these different organisations popping up and didn't know how they were linking in with mainstream services and what the referral mechanisms outwards were. And what was able to do in the remit of the time I had was this website, which has got highlights all the key national agencies around different issues and signposting to their search engines that have, it can link people into key services that are available locally, and also case studies and links to reports and things. So there's some stuff on there that's similar and different to what's in the research report.